are tuned in to Mid Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
All right, it's time for us to get into conversation with Hanlie van der Westhuizen, speaking to us about stigma and misconceptions surrounding psychosis. Now, psychosis doesn't mean crazy or dangerous, like a lot of people might think, because stigma keeps on whispering that, right? And so we want to fight myths with facts, and we want to push back against the labels that do more harm than good. Hanlie, good morning once again, and welcome to the program.
Thanks so very much, Bongi. Morning.
Good morning. All right. So we're talking about the stigma and the misconceptions. And, you know, sometimes I wonder if we'll ever get over these. I wonder if we'll ever come to a point where there's no more stigma. We don't have any more misinformation, misconceptions about a lot of these mental health conditions. What are some of the most damaging myths about psychosis in particular?
Yeah, well, I think stigma is alive and well, that we're working towards alleviating it. But some of the most damaging myths about psychosis is basically that psychosis is a sign of moral weakness or personal failure. And due to the lack of knowledge and you know, people having you know, information regarding mental illness. So it really drives that person then to not seek help, you know, if you feel it's a personal failure. Yeah. The other one is that people with psychosis are dangerous or violent. I think later in our discussion we're going to get to the impact of media, but there's a strong, you know, understanding that people who are psychotic can get dangerous or violent or are that, in fact, as an individual. Mm-hmm. Also, that psychosis is untreatable and always permanent, that the person will suffer for the rest of their life with the condition. And also that psychosis is rare, it only affects certain groups. I also heard very recently that people believe that psychosis only affects adults. Now, although psychosis, you know, there's a smaller presentation in children or in young adults, it is definitely not the case that it only affects adults. Then a myth that is really very prevalent in South Africa is that psychosis is caused by evil spirit or witchcraft. Mm-hmm. You know, there are many communities that still believe that you know, psychosis is the result of supernatural or spiritual causes. And, you know, these culturally or spiritual explanations, they often see them as sufficient, and that Western medicine is unnecessary. It is really a problem in our country because in South Africa we've got a very diverse cultural landscape, and it means that these myths can vary in prominence and interpretation across the different groups. For example, you know, if you look at Zulu communities, they may interpret psychosis through a spiritual lens involving ancestors. And I don't want to stereotype this because there are a lot of dynamic changes in our communities. But these are still, you know, rooted, and very often in a crisis, people will go back to the more prominent cultural belief system. Mm-hmm. In the Khoisan Sotho communities, people may attribute symptoms to witchcraft or curses. You know, so although the urbanized or Western influence groups are more accepting of medical explanations, you know, these may still be very prominent. As I say, when you go through this crisis, we tend to go back to our childhood belief system. Mm-hmm. The reason why these are so damaging, Bongi, is because they delay treatment. You know, it delays medical and timely medical intervention. And as we discussed earlier, the timely treatment is usually the best sign of healing. You know, if we can get early into a treatment program, our prognosis is far more optimistic. Mm-hmm. And then also the stigma and the discrimination causes isolation. People are led with shame, secrecy. There are strained relationships within the family, And it really places a lot of stress on not only the individual but also their family system, and in general, there's just poor outcomes due to these beliefs.
So it really is important that we are informed about this and that we get rid of the stigma and continue educating ourselves on these conditions. And you talked about the media and pop culture. How do they contribute to the stigma?
Movies, books, TV shows have played a significant role in shaping the public perceptions of psychosis, but often depicting it in a dramatic and a very sensationalized way. So while some movies or films can provide insightful and compassionate portrayals, others actually reinforce the stereotypes or the misconceptions. I thought of, just highlighting a few of the movies to help understanding. If we think about the film A Beautiful Mind, I think it was early in the 2000s that film was on the roll. It's based on the life of the mathematician John Nash, who experienced paranoid schizophrenia. Yes, and that film shows his delusions, his hallucinations, and eventual treatment. It is a good film because it highlights the struggles of living with psychosis, but it also emphasizes the potential for recovery, the importance of support, and the distinction between reality and delusion. So it portrays schizophrenia as a manageable condition with proper treatment and support. In contrast with that, there's a film that almost are getting a lot of prominence and maybe cult status. It's the movie Donnie Darko. I think it was 2001. It's a movie where the protagonist experiences hallucinations and visions of a mysterious figure, leading viewers to question whether these psychotic episodes are supernatural phenomena. So although it raises questions about reality, mental health, and perception, it leaves ambiguity and it reinforces the stereotype about unstable, dangerous mind and supernatural influence. So that is not really helping us. And then if we think of the more recent one, Black Swan, I think it was 2010, and it also won an Oscar, if I'm not mistaken. The protagonist experienced hallucinations and paranoia as part of her psychological breakdown. It explores the pressures of perfectionism and mental health struggles, but some may interpret it as sensationalizing and linking it to violence and instability.
Yes.
So that is rather questionable. And then I think the film that people mostly think of when they think of psychosis is the character of Norman Bates in Psycho. It's a 1960 film. And that character actually had dissociative identity disorder, formerly known as multiple personality disorder, and that's another myth. People often think that psychosis involves multiple personality. That form really reinforces the stereotype of a dangerous madman, contributing to fears about mental illness linked to violence. So, it is a difficult one. I think what is also just important to say here is as much as films can help, I think it is very easy for a scriptwriter or a writer of a book to include a colorful character and color the character in with mental health problems or psychosis. And the association with crime and horror and the depiction of psychosis in horror and thriller genres, I really feel that these genres exploit mental health conditions for shock value, reinforcing stereotypes, and emphasizing the myth of unpredictability and danger associated with mental health, which is, in my opinion, not fair.
Yes, yes. And I guess maybe it's just to sensationalize for the sake of entertainment or making it more dramatic, right? But
yeah,
it does stick in our minds if we don't know any better, if we don't know anything about the condition and this is our first introduction to it, then that's kind of what we end up going with. That's what we stick with.
And also in those movie portrayals, you know, there's very often a misrepresentation of symptoms. Mm-hmm. Very often stigmatizing language and imagery are used for that shock value. And very often the positive narratives regarding recovery is ignored.
Yeah.
So that is something that we need to think of. But, you know, on the same hand, media does help. If we think of books, for instance, if I can just, you know, name a few books that are, you know, of value here. If we think about the one and foremost book, most probably, it's an autobiographical account by Ellen Sachs. The title is The Center Cannot Hold, My Journey Through Madness. And it's Sachs is a legal scholar who lived with schizophrenia, and it really offers an honest personal perspective on living with psychosis. Mm-hmm. It emphasized resilience, treatment, and the possibility of leading a fulfilling life despite mental illness.
Mm.
So these are good, you know, source of media that are positive. Two other books, maybe just to mention, it's memoirs, so it's a more narrow narrative of the person's life, is An Unquiet Mind, a memoir of moods and madness by Jamieson. And it's a memoir by a clinical psychologist diagnosed with bipolar disorder, which included episodes of psychosis. So it really provides an insight into the experience of psychosis within the context of mood disorders and highlighting the importance of understanding and treatment. So it's really a humanizing story of mental illness, which emphasizes on hope and recovery. And then I think another one which is also well known is The Quiet Room, The Journey Out of the Torment of Madness. It's by Laurie Schiller, and it's a struggle with schizophrenia and a path to recovery. And what I like about this is it's deeply personal. Mm. It educates readers about the symptoms, about the stigma as well, and about the treatment of psychosis. And it really demonstrates that recovery is possible, and it promotes empathy. The reason why these books matters are the fact that it personalizes experience, it educates us, it reduces stigma, and it empowers laypersons and families and caregivers with understanding. I forgot about the other book that I wanted to mention. It's a book that is maybe more academic, but for the general public. And I think it's a helpful book because the title is Living with Schizophrenia, A Family Guide to Making a Difference. It's by Lieberman and Dixon. And it's really a practical book, you know, written for families. And it's for lay readers, you know, offering insights and understanding in supporting loved ones with psychosis, some of our previous topics that we've done.
Okay. All right. And you know, you did touch on this earlier on, but let's speak a little bit more about how stigma might affect people seeking help.
Well, I think first of all, there's the fear of social disapproval and discrimination.
Right.
You know, in some South African communities, psychosis and other mental illnesses are misunderstood and associated with spiritual beliefs, witchcraft, and moral failings. So, you know, individuals fear being labeled as being possessed. So, you know, that really make people avoid seeking help. Mm. So the lack of awareness and misconceptions as a result of stigma really leads to low help seeking. And there are various research studies and data in South Africa, specifically in South Africa. And I don't want to go into too much academic talk, but there's a number of academic studies, and all of them come to the reality that stigma drives low help-seeking behavior. That is the most important thing. So it delays treatment, and the impact of stigma is rather gloomy outcomes.
All right.
And on the positive side, yes. On the positive side, we do have initiatives and programs addressing stigma in South Africa. So that is rather positive. Things are happening. We do have the mental health awareness campaign that is driven by the South African government and various NGOs, which has launched campaigns to improve mental health literacy. Mm-hmm. The South African Depression and Anxiety Group, SADOC, they've got a program, Integration of Traditional and Biomedical Care, this program involved traditional healers in mental health education to bridge cultural gaps and promote early help seeking. I think there's also training for healthcare workers, because it's very, very important to make sure that the primary care model, especially prevalent in our rural areas, that model is aware and knowledgeable in terms of referral strategies and identifying people who need help, and to create supportive environments for those individuals. At Vista, the clinic where I work, we have a campaign. Our CEO, Mr. Francois Lowe, has donated a Volkswagen Beetle Classic motor vehicle. And on a yearly basis, he personally drives to areas, remote areas in South Africa, and drive awareness campaigns. We also have the Crazy for Walking campaign, where we do walks, and through that walks educate communities in terms of mental health care possibilities and services that are aware.
Right. Now, what language changes do you think can make a difference in reducing stigma?
That's very important. The moment that we reduce negative stereotypes, like crazy, mad, possessed, and we use more respectful, accurate, non-stigmatizing terminology such as a person living with psychosis or individual experiencing a mental health crisis, that humanizes the condition and it reduces blame and fear. It's also very important that we start to normalize mental health conditions. It's important that we frame mental health issues as common, treatable health conditions similar to a physical illness. That can really reduce shame. In the clinic where I work, there's an increasing number of professionals also steering away from using terminology like patient. We rather use terminology like mental health user. And with that comes the understanding that the treating relationship is a collaborative space. It is an alliance that we create between the professional and the mental health user, and that we are in this collaborative space, we share responsibilities and we respect each other. And it's really far from the previous models where a lot of power was invested in the professional and the mental health user had to go along with treatment plans. People today have far more input into what they want and what can work for them. And we generally focus on treating people within their living environment, their cultural understanding, and the way that they make sense of their life. Example here is, I have numerous examples where we work with traditional healers when somebody has a mental health illness. Very often, if I meet someone at Vista Clinic, the person will say to me, but, I think that I first want to see my traditional healer, or I want to complete this ritual at home, because I feel if I complete this ritual at home, I've got the approval of my ancestors. And very often we will say to the person, that is okay, go do that and come back. And then we take it further with medicine and psychotherapy and all the other multidisciplinary interventions that we do. So it's very important to also meet our you know, mental health users where they are at, and you know, using language that are culturally sensitive is also very important. I want to refer to something, and it's campaigns that actually drive language sensitive strategies, and I hope that I pronounce these right, because I'm not as good as I want to be in isiZulu or isiXhosa. But the campaign is the Ukufila Nokupulukisa campaign.
Okay.
And if you translate this loosely, it means living with a challenge or living with difficulty. And isn't that beautiful? But we can say that life carries on. Life carries on just as we intended it to carry on, mm-hmm. with a difficulty, with a challenge. So this is a beautiful example of using language to normalize mental health, to make it everyday and to make it part of our everyday discussions, and to open the door for you know, sharing when we do have difficulties.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And then finally, Hanley, how can we normalize mental health conversations in our communities? I mean, there's so many, you know, the stigma is not just around psychosis, it's just mental health conditions in general as well. How can
Absolutely.
We normalize this? Yeah.
Absolutely. I think it's important that we commit to use culturally sensitive language. I think it's important that we commit to share stories of recovery and resilience. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to engage community leaders and influence, traditional leaders, religious leaders, teachers, local elders, all those people who have influence. We need to include them in our fight against stigma. Mm-hmm. As I said, we need to talk about it, mental health topics, into our daily life conversations. So in that, we're going to create safe spaces and supportive spaces for people to talk. Education, awareness, always extremely important, very, very important. We need to address structural barriers as well. And that is a difficult one, but we need to also, you know, address those. And the other thing that I actually wanted to say is something that we not often talk about is the issue of transparency. Mm-hmm. Transparency from influence, healthcare workers, prominent community figures. There's a lot of power in transparency in mental health advocacy. The moment that we are transparent about our own struggles, we model vulnerability as a strength. We also normalize the mental health challenges. Mm-hmm. We build trust and credibility by authentically sharing what we are about. And it really inspires help seeking and support. Mm-hmm. And there are some examples of its effectiveness. We've got an international example, obviously, Lady Gaga. Whether you like her music or not, this lady has been an example in terms of mental health advocacy. Mm-hmm. She openly says, I've been to therapy, I've taken medication, I've spoken openly about my mental health struggles. Mm-hmm. So that is great to normalize it. On South African turf, we've got Caster Semenya, our athlete, while primarily known for athletic achievements, Semenya has openly discussed her struggles with gender identity and the mental health pressures of public scrutiny. Mm. And she was very honest about societal expectations, personal challenge affecting her mental health. And this openness, I think, really helped people. Selena Gomez, international singer, also very open about her struggle with depression, anxiety, and bipolar disorder. And she said, I've learned that mental health is just as important as physical health. Mm-hmm. I think these stories do matter. It normalizes mental health struggles. They encourage others to seek help, and they destigmatize mental health issues across different cultures and communities.
And you get to see that even the people who are in the spotlight, people who you would assume everything is going well for them, they're successful, well-known, when you see them having those struggles, you realize that this is not, because sometimes we think this is, it's a poor man's disease, or this is something that just affects those who are not doing that well in life in general. So when we see those people who are looked up to and the people who are celebrated speaking openly about their own challenges, I guess that also does help to recognize that this is just, you know, it can affect anybody.
Absolutely. Mental health knows no discrimination. Yes. It affects people across financial strata, age strata, children, adolescents, young adults, our geriatric population, communities everywhere, internationally, locally, everywhere. It affects everybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Final thoughts about how we can end the stigma, or at least start moving in that direction?
I think the most important thing is language. Language was so important. The way we speak really resonates deep into our soul. And to just say, I'm not going to use derogatory terms when referring to mental illness. That already helps a lot. To be open and authentic about your own struggles, even if it's a minor struggle, it can help somebody in your community who has a bigger struggle to be open. It just opens the door for communication, and it creates a safe space. Absolutely. And that is something that each and everybody, each individual can commit to.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much, Hanley, as always, for speaking with us on the subject. And hopefully this is a step in the right direction as well, these conversations that we're having. Thank you so much for your time. God bless you, and look forward to chatting again next week.
Thanks so much, Bongi. See you next week. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
You are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.